This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenbrick, your host. I'm very happy today to be chatting with one of the really bright young chamber ensembles on the scene, a trio whose performances and recordings have them being compared to the top ensembles of their kind to have ever existed, the Neve Piano Trio. Founding members Anna Williams, violin, and Mikhail Veselov, cello, and Ari Nakamura, who is the second pianist in the history of the group. Their name may seem odd, Neve, which is spelled like leave, but with an N. It's a Gaelic word meaning bright and radiant, and the Gaelic spelling, they thought, might be a little hard on the American-English pronunciation difficulty scale. How they came by this unusual name is a story they will tell, which is heartwarming and spirit-lifting. This group has been turning heads and ears since they were first heard. You're listening to the second movement of the Piano Trio No. 2 in E minor by Dmitri Shostakovich from a recording the Neve made from their own pocket and used as a demo and a calling card. It garnered a call from the prestigious Chendos Records label in England, who produced their first two acclaimed recordings, French and American trios, respectively. They have a new recording out, literally this week, of music by Astor Piazzolla, and they are coming to Freehold, New Jersey this weekend to perform on the Downtown Concert Series. I'll give details about that at the conclusion of our program. Their motto is engage, exchange, and connect. And they've been doing that through their recordings, concerts, multimedia collaborations, projects, and education. The trio's on the faculty as alumni artists, faculty ensemble in residence at the Boston-based Longy School of Music of Bard College, which is where I caught up with all three of them a few weeks back. Today to be here with the entire Neve Piano Trio, which I'll get to that in a second, which is we're going to have to do kind of oral theater here. So to my left is Ari Nakamura, the pianist.
Hello, hello.
And Anna Williams in the center.
Hi.
On violin, yeah, good. And Mikhail or Misha Veselov on cello.
Hello.
So there you go. That's your layout of voices. And I was going to say, it's a weird question to start with, but I don't often get complete groups. A lot of times if I do string quartets, I'll get two of the four or one, a quarter. So it's very cool to get all of you. The strange question is, how much time do the three of you actually spend together?
So much time.
Most time, is apart to doing solo work or working with other musicians. I mean, give our audiences a quartet, they think they're all hinged at the hip and they're always just following each other around playing. Piano trio is a little bit different because, we'll get to it, there's a logistic that you need an instrument, which means you can't just show up in any room and practice.
That's
so
true.
I'm just curious, how much time do you spend out of your...
Well, I would say we really have a lot of respect for what you just described of, like, the string quartet model of being attached to the hip, because that's how you get, in our opinion, I mean, I'm speaking on behalf of everyone, so, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that's how you feel, you know, you get that sort of cohesion and really a unity as an ensemble, which you can hear in so many of these wonderful string quartets. So I think that's kind of our model and what we're going for, as opposed to the sort of like pickup model of like, well, like let's put this piece together and then see you later.
Like so, in a week.
Right. So we don't do that. So we really rehearse all the time and are always working on new projects. So like we just got back from we spent all day yesterday in the car getting to a concert, played the concert, came back, got home late, and now we're here and we'll rehearse after this. And, you know, it's a Sunday and then tomorrow we'll start the week over again.
Well,
just for writing, just like kind of a, like in a week. I mean, how many hours, how many days of the week are you guys rehearsing as the trio?
If we could, we would rehearse at least like 3 to 4 hours every day.
Really?
If we're in one place.
Are you meeting every day, basically?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Sometimes things come up, you know, here and there, like one day a week that we can't make it. But we rehearse pretty much every day. And we also, right now at Laundry School of Music, and we teach classes together, we coach, we do a lot of things here as well. Not just playing, but other things that we have to take care of together. Which is
Because a trio and a quartet, I mean, we have the whole jet set thing going. You have these jet set choirs now where the people like fly in and they rehearse and do the concert, and they're really good ensembles.
Totally.
But it'd be harder, I think, to do.
Yeah.
And there are a few where they really don't reside near each other.
Right.
They sort of get together and get a concert down. But
yeah. And if that works for them, that's amazing.
Yeah. Just,
that's not how we are approaching things.
Before we get to, and we have to do the story behind your name, before we get that, which is a very moving and unique story, but just your dynamic. I mean, Ari, you're the second pianist in the group, right? Mm-hmm. And you all went to different schools, right? So usually there's common ground, you know, with a quartet. So what's the common ground? And as with maybe with you two and then adding you in, what's the common ground?
Sure. So we, I mean, it's funny that we're here at the Laundry School of Music in Cambridge. You can probably hear people practicing next door, most likely. So Misha and I met here when we started graduate school. We were students in, 2008?
Yeah, so 10 years.
2000-something. So we started playing together, like, probably from the first day, very early on. And we had this idea and desire to create a chamber music group together. And then formed the trio, and then we're very lucky to find Ari. We were all playing at and teaching at this festival in the Berkshires in Lenox, Mass. It's called the Arts Ahimsa Music Festival. It's a wonderful, very unique chamber music festival that goes on for a week. And we were all hired sort of independently as faculty, and then we met, and it was sort of the stars aligning and feeling that sense of camaraderie and commonality in music making. So it just all kind of worked out, and you know.
That's the story.
Well, I mean, we're going to get to rep, but the piano trio behind the string quartet, you don't have to worry too much about rep, and I want to get back to rep in a second, but just staying on this thing, I mean, but why form a piano trio? I mean, with the two of you, and then you have to make the decision to join them. I mean, you could have solo careers, you could be sitting in an orchestra, you two could be part of a quartet, you could be on your... I mean, why do the piano trio and say we're going to commit careers and hours to this?
I think, I mean, to come back to your first question, first of all, we always are together. And I think that sense of, you know, support from each other and being always, you know, on each other's best side and supporting each other in the most meaningful way, I think that's a huge part. As opposed to being a soloist, you know, and traveling on your own all the time and not having anybody to talk to. It's like our rides in the car and sometimes, you know, hours and hours, but we're always talking about something, next project, new rap, listening to different things. And so it's always great to have a company. That's first thing. But also the repertoire too, you know, we get to play so many roles. Sometimes it's a sonata. Sometimes it's a, almost we two of us feel like we're playing in a quartet. Sometimes it's playing a concerto. Sometimes it's actually all three of us having different roles. Sometimes it's being an orchestra. So you have so many different hats you can wear in the piano trio. And it's such a vast, incredible repertoire for this medium.
It's so rich, you know, because you have the piano, which can essentially be an orchestra on its own.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can take on, like you were saying, other roles within that. But it can be extremely soloistic. It can be very much like a unified sort of one voice musical idea. So I think it's, sort of just piggybacking on what you're saying, I think it's really exciting the possibilities that exist within the really vast repertoire that, you know, we're an abundance of riches that way.
Yeah, but being a piano trio, and you can like pretend they're not here, because you form the kink in this, because all they need is a stage standard music. You need to have the instrument, and it's just like if you had a solo career, you want to make sure the instrument is right, of course it has to be tuned, blah, 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 all this stuff that is the baggage with having a piano. You're not going out on solo stage and doing a solo recital, it's a chamber thing. I'm just curious.
But I just enjoy playing with them.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. I'm inspired by their artistry individually, and then together, I think that we play even better as a trio. That's what I very much enjoyed.
So, I mean, in the best sense of chamber music, there's something that fills each of your voids by doing the piano trio.
Exactly.
Rather than doing something else in your career that you know, what they,
like, I know, I just, you know, picked it because I enjoyed it the most.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a chamber musician at the core.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, I just...
I remember seeing a piano trio, like, very formidable experience, like, a young age in Boston, and I was sort of, like, overwhelmed by, like, oh my gosh, how is this, what is this, yeah. what is this combination? It's amazing, it's so magical, so I've been partial to it.
Okay, you've told the story, it's in print, but let's go to your name, because so many quartets and piano trios and every chamber ensemble are just hunting the wilds for names, and you get every composer, and now it's painters, and it's musical expressions, and it's all kinds of action words.
Yeah.
And yours comes nowhere from that. It actually comes roots in New Jersey.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, tell the story. It's a really moving story. And it's, I think, I can't think of another group that has a name because of this path.
So, oh.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so Niamh, it's a Gaelic word. Of course, we fudged the spelling, because if we were to do the Gaelic spelling, it'd be like M's and H's and P's and all kinds of stuff. So, right, it would be a nightmare. So, it's a Gaelic word. It happens to mean bright and radiant, but we had no idea of that when we chose it. In fact, we were told that post factum, and we were all like, oh no, people think that we chose this in a presumptuous way. No. So, it was actually after a very meaningful experience we had in New Jersey, like you're saying. We got to know this community in New Jersey that we would play for, and this one audience member in particular, his name was Bruce, and he was someone for whom music just really meant the world. You know, he was really emotive about it. It just really touched him very deeply, and he would talk to us about it after we would play, and ultimately he had an accident that left him paralyzed, so... It was sort of a no-brainer for us at the time that, you know, if he couldn't come to us, as he was so excited and willing to have done before his accident, we were, of course, going to go to him. So we started going to him, and we would play at his bedside, and it was really amazing because, you know, we just were giving what we could of playing for him, the least we could do, and in return, he would tell us these really touching, like, intimate, beautiful stories about his life before he had this accident. You know, he would talk about different adventures he had had, and he talked about his family, and most notably, he would talk about his daughter, whose name was Niamh. And it was just sort of, I don't think he ever knew, but I think it's safe to say that, like, we felt like we got more out of the exchange than he could have ever known, you know, maybe probably more than he could have. And it just sort of encapsulated how this music that we love, it has the potential to really connect people on such a profound level. So we wanted to honor him and that experience and to carry it with us going forward in whatever circumstances we might be in. So that's why we chose Niamh.
Okay, well, two questions. Did he know you chose the name before he passed?
I don't think he did. Okay. I think his daughter, who is currently living in Ireland, Niamh, she was made aware of it.
Okay.
We've yet to meet her. We would love to meet her. But, but yeah, so, and I think she spells her name the correct way, I would assume. So, she might... You might question our spelling, which is fair.
But you had the trio before this, and the trio, I mean, everybody needs a name, right, for managers and everything like that. So were you called something before Niamh?
No, it was sort of a formative experience.
Okay.
It was as we were, you know, just starting out, and I just remember that moment really vividly when I was like, this has to be what we remember. This has to be what we carry with us, and what more... sort of visceral way, more sort of, I don't know, what more of a regular reminder could you have than naming yourselves after an experience like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you will forever have to tell the story.
It's true.
But it's a good story to relive, and it sort of honors his memory of his enthusiasm and passion.
From one of those acclaimed Chandos releases called American Moments, music of Arthur Foote, Leonard Bernstein, and a very... very young Eric Korngold, here are the closing minutes of the first movement of that composer's trio, his Opus 1, as performed by my guests today, the Niamh Trio. Thank you.
Let's go to Rep. I mean, let's cover the first two recordings. First was the American one, which has an interesting choice of Rep. Korn Gold, the Korn Gold Trio. It's called American Moments, but it's American Moment. Korn Gold's transplanted. So yes. The trio comes from before flight or after flight?
That's true. It's before.
Before flight.
It's before. And yes. I think you know, it needs a little bit of explaining, because when we chose the name, what we had in mind is sort of honoring where American music tradition came from.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that it had to be written in America. And, mm-hmm. you know, Bernstein, he brought his rich Eastern European Jewish tradition, you know, Foote brought European tradition, mm-hmm. Brahms, and even, you know, Schumann, Mendelssohn, and Korn Gold obviously brought, you know,
right.
Viennese, like Richard Strauss and things like that. So, but it all somehow ended up here, and it influenced
right.
everything that came after that. And that was the idea of calling it American Moments,
right.
to sort of remind everybody where things came from. It's
like
from
us.
All over the world. Exactly,
yeah.
yeah.
True.
So it wasn't, you know, like a encyclopedic thing. It was, like, it was all written in the United States.
Right.
You know, that wasn't
right.
the idea. It was pointing out where it all came from.
No, and I mean, if you, meaning Nielsen, you swoon to all those great Korn Gold melodies in the movies.
Yeah.
I mean, the first movement has one of these themes that
absolutely.
Just takes you right over the top. I mean,
yeah.
you just picture something on the screen and
absolutely.
The big love story coming to the climax. Anyway, the Bernstein is an interesting choice, unless you want to say some more about Korn
Gold. Oh, I just wanted to say about Korn Gold that, you know, yeah, he wasn't born here, but he's like the classic American success story of he came from
yeah.
afar and he was the first individual, right, who was given the Oscar
yeah,
for his movie music. And for some, it was not the studio, right? It was the individual.
Right.
So, you know, we should celebrate that he was celebrated here.
Well, the Bernstein, a lot of people, you know, everybody's caught up in the centenary now, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people may not know he wrote it. And this is, was he still Curtis, right? 37?
Harvard, I think.
He was
at Harvard. He's
gone
right
down the street.
I think so.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty
yeah.
pissed
yeah.
in.
He was, starting with Walter Piston.
Okay, yeah. So it's worth getting the recording just to find out about the Bernstein, like you said. And then Arthur Foote, you know, his music, everybody keeps saying this, it should be better known, it should be more played. Yeah, it's a lot of lip service, but it needs to be done. I'm glad you guys recorded some music. And the concert you're going to be doing up in Freehold, part of the Downtown Concert Series this weekend, is your French album.
Yes.
Right.
Are you doing, just to give out the rationale behind the pairing of these three, the Debussy and the Fauré, but then the Rousseau.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think when we looked at the options and we're talking to the label and figuring out what to record, and obviously Ravel was the first thing, you know, and everybody loves the trio. And Ravel is often accompanied by Debussy, Fauré, Franck trios, you know. But we realized that De Roussel is actually an incredible piece that is very underappreciated, and it's not recorded a lot, it's not performed a lot, and it's such an incredible piece, and it's unlike anything else.
Right.
It's very atmospheric. It's his early output, but he was in his 30s when he wrote it. It was Opus 2 only, because he was in French Navy, so he traveled the world and got influenced by all kinds of music. There were, you know, Asian music and some jazz, and you can hear all that sort of finding its way into his music. So I think the combination really intrigued us, you know, Roussel and
mm-hmm.
Fauré, written in a very similar time, but so different. It's such a different.
Yeah, every time I play his music, I'm ready to say you should really get to know more of this composer.
Yeah,
music,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
the symphonic stuff or whatever. Mishi just said, well, the label. Well, this is no just label. I mean, how. Yeah, Chendos is one of the great classical dependent
absolutely.
Labels
they're,
ever.
They're
yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah.
They're
amazing.
Absolutely amazing, yeah.
And you didn't just, like, send them a tape and say, hey, do you like this? How did the Chendos relationship come about?
Well, we we had, how did they found us?
We recorded the CD for a competition audition, which is...
Oh, that's a funny story, yeah.
Long, it's like, you know, a long gone history, but we didn't get into the competition, but we, you know, recorded two full pieces and we decided, well, might as well do something with that. And, you know, let's like print, you know, a few hundred copies of the CD.
We put it online, that's what we did.
And put, yeah, just for the concerts, and I put it on iTunes, just why not? And then we basically got contacted by...
I mean, we got some radio play and we got
some reviews,
and then we were contacted and we were like, oh my gosh, it's Christmas morning, like this is dream come true to record for them. So we're totally delighted and thrilled to be on their roster. We think they're amazing.
Dipping into my guest, the Neve Trio's other Chendos release, and by the way, the program they will be performing in Freehold, New Jersey, this weekend on the Downtown Concert Series. The disc is called French Moments, trios of Claude Debussy, Gabriel Fauré, and here we'll listen to the opening minutes of the first movement of the trio Opus 2 by Albert Roussel.
So I would normally do this at the end, but since we're here, and the next recording, which is due soon?
Yes.
November.
Yes, so that's for a different label. But it's a slightly different project. It's not straight ahead trios, it's with a mezzo-soprano, and that's music of Astor Piazzolla and all new arrangements for trio and voice, which was a really cool project, very different, really fun. We got to work with Leonardo Suarez Paz, who is very close to the source, for lack of a better term, because his father was Piazzolla's original violinist.
Oh, wow.
So it was really cool because we got to have these kind of coaching sessions with him where he would talk to us about sort of lilt and, you know, different strokes that are very specific to this kind of music. So it was very cool kind of firsthand account of, you know, getting close to the source.
Well, he also worked on his arrangements using the manuscripts of Piazzolla. He actually has some actual handwritten Piazzolla, That's manuscripts. Cool. And so the source was absolutely incredible. We would never have another opportunity like that.
Yeah.
So we're so lucky.
But it was so authentic, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was pretty, or it feels really authentic. You know, he knows what's authentic.
So it's basically coming out now. Aaron, but I mean, this show isn't funded by Chandos. What's the label it's on?
So it's the Yazeka label.
Oh, it's on Yazeka. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've done many things with that. Oh, great label.
They're totally great. Absolutely great.
Let's stay on rep. You, as a chamber entity, are in second place to the string quartet, but both of you fall in the category that you wouldn't really have to look at a single note of music written after the year 2000 and you'd have a fine career because there's so much repertoire for the piano trio. So how do you, maybe take it as a two-part, how do you as a trio approach that, meaning you've got a ton of stuff you can play and have played and maybe want to play yet, yet you want to push this medium into the future, you want to get new things, and then maybe you're here as faculty ensemble and residence at Longy, so how do you handle that, so maybe take it internally, repertoire, and then how do you handle it passing on your knowledge as a trio to young musicians who might want to do the same?
So, oh my gosh, daunting question, really probably a daunting answer. I don't know. It's, I mean, like you said, there's an abundance of riches. We could play everything in existence and not have any, I mean, we could try to play everything that's already been written and not ever get it done.
So many great composers love this movie.
More than like that.
Yes, exactly. We're spoiled rotten with amazing works written for the medium. And that being said, like you also said, there are new voices, young voices, women voices writing today that deserve to be heard and are, I think, really one of the ways that we as, you know, living, breathing artists can help to propel this medium into the future and not have it, you know, wither in a sense. So I think it's a balance because the great repertoire is great for a reason. It's withstood the test of time because of how remarkable it really is. And in the same breath, there are composers who are coming out of that tradition and taking their own route and expanding the language. So I think it's a, I guess that's a really roundabout way of saying it's a combination of both of, you know, the sort of standards, you know, the Brahms, et cetera, and then maybe the lesser known works, like Roussel is an example of a work that is also fantastic, not super well represented, and then encouraging and being inspired by working with new collaborators. Just yesterday, we premiered a work by Dale Trombora, a wonderful woman composer living in California. So trying to do a balance of all of it. And I think at the core of how we find the repertoire and how we choose the repertoire, since there are only so many hours of the day and only so many pieces you can get in your fingers, in theory, at one time, sort of what speaks to us as an ensemble and how can we connect to this piece and in terms of, you know, emotions or colors or, you know, things
like that.
Well,
you are a three-headed thing. How do you filter repertoire, especially new repertoire, saying we should do this? How does that work?
We read or we meet the composers. We love working with composers and then, you know, like getting the opinions.
Yeah.
But then the choice to take it on and spend your time learning it.
Well, it's always a process.
Because you could vote.
Right, that's true. That's actually
good. Of course, that's always had that tie problem. Yeah.
That's a good point. No.
We never got to the point where we had to, you know, had to make, like, cuts, per se. We always bring pieces we're excited about, and we read, as Ari said, you know, some new works if someone sends us a score, or we work with, you know, people whose music we just love, you know, like the premiere piece by Eric Nathan, who's a Rhode Island based composer who writes incredible music. We have a piece by Lisa Hafter this season as well. She's a New York based composer. So we just love them as people, love their work, and, you know, that experience, as Eric pointed out, getting their input and actually having the opportunity to work with a composer who can actually tell you, like, oh, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
To be part of the process is a huge privilege that you don't get to have with Brahms or Roussel. You know, Roussel, unfortunately, because it is underperformed, is also underprinted. There's only, I think, one edition out there. And Claire has mistakes and things like that. We have to be like, is it sharp or flat? And trying to figure it out and get our best guess, you know. With living composers, you actually get it. Creative process of being part of it.
It's true. It really is a collaboration in the best case. You know, when you have someone who comes with their piece, it's a collaborative process in terms of them saying, "Let me try this way. Oh, this is what I meant. Oh, let me change that. I meant a dot. Things like that." But then talking through the piece, what their conception of it is, and I would just emphasize what you just said, Misha, about, like, it really feels like such a privilege. It's like an honor when someone comes to you with their piece and is like, "Hey, could you help sort of bring this to life?" I think we all kind of feel like that's a really cool thing to be able to be a part of, and a privilege.
I haven't noticed this with piano trios. I haven't had that many complete piano trios on the earth, but with a lot of the string quartets, there's these summits of cycles, you know, whether it's the Beethoven, whether it's the Haydn, whether it's the Shostakovich. I mean, you guys have composers who have written,
right?
But I don't. Is there any burning desire that you got to do one composer's complete piano trio?
Not for me.
No, yeah, it's been done before. You know, the Beethoven cycles and Brahms or Brahms trios. Haydn has 53 as you can think. You know, marathon, which could be a cool idea, like a Haydn marathon. But you know, in reality, there's something about we always want to talk about programming. We're trying to balance it, even with the French recording. You know, Debussy and Rossell, Ferré, they're so different.
Right.
So every time we think about concert, we're thinking of a balance of some kind that is not just all Brahms. As much as I love Brahms, it's like it's so rich, it's so heavy in a way, in a good way. But when it's all Brahms, I don't know, I think there's something that makes Brahms pop out more if you compare it, put it next to Bernstein or, you know, there's something about that.
Yeah, and there's always something about interesting about piano trio is that a lot of the composers, great pantheon of composers who wrote piano trios, when they're writing string quartets, sometimes very intimate, piano trio, they were all great pianists for the most part.
Mostly.
So you've got a piano part in there that was under their hands, where you can't say that about every string quartet, you know?
That's
so
true.
From Brahms to Mendelssohn to Beethoven, back to Haydn, Mozart. So that's an interesting dynamic when you look at your part, knowing...
Yeah.
Because when you look at your cello part, you're like, well, this composer didn't play cello. They're a master composer, but they probably didn't play cello.
Sometimes.
You don't have that luxury, you know? Your piano parts are usually... Sourced.
Mostly heavy, and yes. But I could tell that, you know, like maybe the composers, they were playing all parts, like an orchestral
reduction,
special
care. Go to the second half of the question I posed earlier. You're here at Longi. So now you've got young musicians who come in and you're coaching them on chamber music, and they see the three of you. Boy, you guys have been pretty successful through recordings. You're kind of saying, I want to do a piano trio. I don't know where you're at. How do you coach them as far as a balance between a great established literature and music of their time?
That's a great question. I think here at Longi, there's a lot going on. There's a great composition department here, and every student here, they actually, as part of their degree, they supposed to actually play one of the pieces by their peers, which is, I think, is a great rule. And, you know, so often they include in their chamber music repertoire, their recitals, and that idea is alive and well here with kind of moving the genre and the medium ahead, whether it's piano trio, quartet, or solo works. So that's a great thing. And of course, you know, everybody gets to play during the course of studies, the greats, you know, and whether it's an orchestra or chamber music. So we really believe in that as a part of education. You have to really experience everything in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of Longi's mottos has been, you know, trying to be the musician that the world kind of needs you to be. And I think there's something really beautiful about encouraging that in students via, you know, of course play the standards and of course, you know, enrich your knowledge of all that's come before, because it's like we touched on earlier, it's such a rich history and it's such a rich tradition. That's there's such an abundance of, you know, to say the word again, riches. And that being said, you know, there's still so much that's being written now. And so for students currently in school, I think, like, if we can help them to not only, you know, get really a firm grasp of the sort of classics, for lack of a better term, but then also staying open and interested and involved with what's happening now and going into the future, I think that's sort of the best, for lack of a better word, it's very practical, because it's, I think, the way of the sort of industry. And I think it's also a very authentic way to create a path in music by staying open to all these different avenues of collaboration, whether it's working with composers or other mediums or, you know, anything that's a little bit outside the box that sort of helps them to find their identity as an artist and create spaces for themselves in whatever community they're in.
I think that, you know, the classical music world is evolving. I think we need to evolve too.
Yeah, and then what's nice about a lot of contemporary composers who even made a name for themselves, they seem to really like this medium. They like the string quartet as well, as obvious.
Right.
I mean, some other chamber mediums, you know, there's sonatas, but they're not on the same output as some of them are embracing the piano trio, even if updating the sound and the way how you produce sound or whatever.
That's true.
But, you know.
So my guest, the Neve Trio's newest recording, is on the Azika label, and it just literally arrived days ago. It is music of the Argentinian tango composer Astor Piazzolla, and features arrangements by Leonardo Suarez Paz, who worked with Piazzolla, and the vocal stylings of mezzo-soprano Carla Jablonski. From Piazzolla's tango operetta, Maria de Buenos Aires, here is Yo Soy Maria.
Praise a lot of nice reviews. If you read them, they're pretty amazing. Some of them have gone, some of these people writing these have gone.
Oh boy.
Well, put it this way. Years ago on Cadenza, I had Menachem Presser as my guest. In fact, on the other end of the state we're sitting at, because I met him at the Stockbridge Inn, because they were playing there.
Oh my gosh.
In the back room of the Stockbridge Inn.
Wow. We just drove by there. We just were.
Out in the Berkshires.
I love the Berkshires. Yeah.
But, I mean, this kind of things drip off these critics' tongues is that you guys could be the successor to a group like Beaux-Arts.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I know, but I mean, how do you feel? I mean, it's really like the initial action, like, and it would be like, oh my gosh. But, I mean, there has to be like some goal in mind. I mean, I've talked to some string quartets who have that, you know, they have that sound or they have that group that they've always looked at. They're contemporary to Kronos. Some of the older ones might be like the Borodin because they hold the record for the longest your string quartet going. but I mean, who have you looked for? And then you read this stuff.
It's my like, gosh. Well, I think. I mean that's really I have to like take a beat for that one. Sure, I need to think about that for a second.
Well, I think you know there's so many wonderful musicians these days, and before you know wonderful trios from like Pedigorsky, Heifetz, Rubinstein Trio, which is you know like was the trio, you know, and now there are a lot of great trios as well. Montrose Trio, there's you know those Bozart, there's all those greats, and I think you know we admire a lot of. Well, admire what they've done and what they're doing, and like Bozart recorded probably every trio under the sun, you know. But I think we don't.
I think that's how they're listed in the catalog. Every trio.
Probably under the sun. but you know, I don't know if we're necessarily speaking for myself, and I'll speak for you guys as well, if you don't mind. But I don't think we're trying to be someone else because I think it's a kind of a. To me, I feel like it's like a kind of you're going to get lost in a path because time is different, you know, the audience are different and the medium is different. We just talked about, you know, writing, composers writing today. Mm-hmm. And I think in that way, trying to emulate someone else's path, I wonder if it's even possible. You know, it's like you have to get a time machine.
We're so different.
And I think that's what's so beautiful about German music is that combination of personalities and sounds and interpretations of music creates its own unique, you know, sort of mix, you know, you can't replicate it. So I think Bozart Trio is going to be always Bozart Trio. And, you know, and same goes to, you know, nobody's going to be like Heifetz, Pedigorsky, and Rubinstein. It's just not possible, you know.
I think the wording, which was flattering to you guys, is to saying, you know, someone has to fill the shoes and carry this meeting forward. And there's lots of great piano trios out there. But for someone to jump right to, like, the Mozart and say, you know, they've got the sound going and they've got, you know, they were impressed enough.
I mean, that's extremely flattering. And we take it with such with a lot of humility and so we really appreciate it and I would agree with what Misha's saying though that you know if you're trying to be someone else you're probably gonna be a cheap knockoff. And so I think that you know the most that we can do is constantly be evolving in our own voices, both individually and as an ensemble. And as long as we are not staying still and not stagnant, and we did this, we're happy with how that came out. How can we continue to, you know, what's the next step? How can we make this better? How can we evolve in this department, addressing the things that, you know, there's always stuff to improve, right? So as long as we continue to work towards that, I think that's, and enjoy it.
I think we strive to have our authentic voices and just like, of course, you know, we want to have that, like, our own sound. And I think that's what we strive to become.
I think one thing also you're doing, a lot of groups, especially with artists your age, are doing, I mean, you've got the singer on the Piazzolla CD, but it's collaborations, and, you know, Neve Plus.
Yeah.
So choreographers and projections.
Yes.
Well, I mean, talk about this, where you are taking your time-honed chamber ensemble here and not only working with other artists but then you've got to get the audience to accept that this should go with what they've come to know as the piano trio sound.
Totally. So we've been really lucky to get to work with very, very cool people, very open-minded and excited to have these kind of different points of view come out in collaboration. So one of the first that we had was when we were based in San Diego, we worked with this fantastic dance company, Blythe Barton Dance, and we did this whole program with Blythe and her company, and it was really equal parts chamber music and then dance, to the point that there were points in the program where there were no dancers on stage. So at some points it was us, you know, in a more traditional way playing with the dancers, and then at other points, for logistical reasons, I had to change our costumes. It was just us on stage, and it was really cool because from an audience standpoint, we got so much feedback as an ensemble, meaning including the dance company, about how it created such a fuller experience of both the dance and the music that it became a mutually enhancing experience for the audience. But that was a production where the repertoire really ranged. I think we did some Haydn and some Fauré and some Shostakovich. It was very, very wide range and brought out all these different elements of the music and the dance. And I think as a collaborator, as being part of that process, that's the real kind of gift that you're given because you're no longer just limited to your perspective of like, how do we play this? How do we do all the things that we're trying to do? But how does this music translate to someone who you give it to in a different medium? You know, oh, that's so interesting that they went for like a really long drawn out movement where we thought this was sort of a, you know, sharp turn or something. And then you start to hear it and see it differently yourself. So I think it's a really rich experience selfishly as the artist to get to be a part of, and hopefully for the audience, because the whole idea is to sort of give a window into this art form to people who might not know that they like it yet. And so if we can reach people via dance or visual art or a film, we have a film that's sort of a music video of sorts that's coming out around the Piazzolla. You know, that was really interesting as well to get to bring this piece to a filmmaker and see what she heard and saw in it. And right. And then it's not just our point of view. It's really a true collaboration that way.
It's always a very delicate balancing act. I won't give names here, but I mean, years ago in Princeton, one of the greatest string quartets in the world did something where they played the music and there was a play going on. It involved Shostakovich about suppression and all this stuff. Uh-huh. It was very interesting. Got rave reviews in New York. I remember when I saw it, my takeaway was both were interesting, but the music of Shostakovich was more powerful. Mm. Therefore, the drama interrupted listening to the music of Shostakovich.
That's a great point.
So that, it's a very delicate balance, and I applaud you guys for doing it, because, again, you had the string quartet, this time-honed chamber ensemble where you have that sound, right? And of course, they're one of the greatest ones in the world, so they had a great sound. Mm-hmm. Same thing with you guys. You know, people come and they go, boy, that blend, it's just, you guys are so amazing. Yeah. But then you had that other element.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure, especially the music you pick, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Anna said in terms of the collaboration, that's very selfish reasons for us to really get other perspectives.
Sure.
But at the same time, as with our interpretation, we cannot please everybody. And
right.
you know, you're going to get someone who's going to be like, it really didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And and that's just fine. We do so many concerts that are just straight performance. You know, we with the program notes in the program, we usually try to talk anyways and sort of tell a little personal tidbit here and there about the piece. But generally, we do so many standard performances, but sometimes having that experience, it's really enriching for us and for some audience members as well, who, as Anna said, they weren't necessarily going to go to a chamber music concert, but they would go to modern dance performance.
Or the play. They might go to the
play. And I think there's always, and I hope there's always will be, so many concerts that you can go to and just hear music and not worry about, you know, other things that might distract you. And I think, so I think there's definitely value to both, and I think they both have right to exist, and because everybody experiences it differently. We got feedback from people who were like, we really loved the Debussy trio, but the visuals were distracting, and that's just fine.
Whereas other people,
from the same concert, we got, you know, different people saying like, oh my gosh, it was such
the
perfect combination, you know.
Really, you're always trying to enhance and not distract, but
exactly,
and that's always the intention. And you know, sometimes it works better than others, but I think it's, that's another way of, I think, a really great path to ensure this medium that we love is thriving.
You just gotta keep trying it.
You know?
Keep trying with what you guys feel right and all that. Before we wrap, it's interesting that you guys, we've covered this, other listeners have heard this, but you guys have like these three words as your little mantra, there's three of you in the group. But I mean, it's engage, exchange, and connect. Okay, all good feel good words. But I mean, you guys really try to live this. I think that's what our listeners heard, in trying to make sure that what your music making is does all these at every level, right? I mean, that's a given. That's, you know, you take these to heart. I mean, it's not just something put on as a slogan. I guess.
And I think it, I mean, thanks. That's really nice. We do try to sort of balance at each project or program that we take on and see if it's sort of, we want to have aspects of those three verbs there, not to come to full circle, but those also were kind of the big takeaways of our initial experience with Bruce, that it really was a moment where we were, you know, equally, you know, all those people in the same room, we were so fully engaged in that moment that it was a true exchange, because we brought our music and he gave so much through his stories and sort of, you know, just presence and spirit, and it was such a profound connection that that's what we tried to like carry forward.
Well, I wish you guys, you know, years of success doing this. Maybe in 25 years, people will say, Piano Trio, so yeah, there's the knee.
Aww.
We hope so. You never
hope so.
I close all my cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two questions. You can all three answer, unless you really want to answer as a group. First one is a hypothetical, which says if you could meet and chat, like we've been chatting, but with someone from the past. So you never had a chance to. When I ask that, the first name that pops into your head. And we're going to go bottom up for this, so
start.
I assume we're talking about music.
No, I've had everything from God to Groucho Marx and everything in between.
Oh my gosh, okay.
Of course, the number one answer is Bach, but when I asked that, because we think about it, a lot of names come, when I said that, what was like the first name that popped?
I would say Shostakovich. I don't know. You know, we only get a glimpse into his look into his world for his music, because he was such a private person, I think, and, yeah. and obviously, you know, time didn't work out. I didn't get to meet him, but you know, but he was a incredible person who had to deal with so much in the world that surrounded him, and he had to write music that he hated, you know, for certain things. But then he wrote this profound, you know, string quartets and trios and symphonies that are just, you know, heart wrenching. And you know,
did you ever have the one degree? Did you ever know or talk to anybody who actually knew him before you passed?
You know, I studied with Natalia Gutman, whose, you know, second concerto, Shostakovich's second cello was written for her.
Yeah.
She is this incredible cellist, and she has this incredible link to all those people like Richter and Shostakovich. But, you know, she wouldn't talk to me about, you know, the personal stories, obviously, you know, which I'm sure she had many. But I don't know, I think he's just incredible. There's something about him that is really fascinating to me as a person, and I wish I had that opportunity to get to know him a little bit.
There you go. Yeah. Here we're going to go. Next.
Well, the first name I thought about was Rubinstein.
Okay.
Because I grew up with listening to his recordings, and I really admire his noble playing. It's not like sentimental, but like very soulful.
Yeah.
Just play, you know.
You know, I've heard stories. He was quite a character. Personally, you know.
I bet.
Unpredictable. Many different behaviors and things like that.
I'm guessing, I'm sure so many pianists were like that too, because, you know, you spend so much time by yourself, just like locked in practice room for 10 hours.
Pianists are all over the place in the past years, picking like great pianists from Richter to, you know, Courtauld to, you
kissing.
Know. Yeah, all kinds of people.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so I have two that came to mind. One is really random. So Jacqueline Dupré, I mean, she's such an interesting character, but, you know, obviously her music making was so heartfelt and came from such a deep place. And I just think she, wow, it'd be really interesting to get to sort of not just talk to her, but like watch her work. I feel like that would be the coolest thing ever. And then the random one, I apologize in advance, Robin Williams. The joy that he brought to, I mean, if you're not a Robin Williams fan, it's totally fine. I happen to be, we're of no relation. Just the joy that he brought and everything he did, and not only being like the funniest person in the world, but also like he was an incredible artist. Like his acting when he was doing serious roles was really touching. So yeah. And that's super out of left field, but Robin Williams would be glad.
It's tragic that by his hand you'll never have that opportunity. It's a tragic. Final question. Everybody I interview on Cadenza fills their life with music is very busy. You guys are very busy now with teaching here, but the conversation. When you have to step away from music, pleasure, relaxation, but do something that is non-musical, revel or respite, what do you turn to? And we'll go keyboard first.
For me, definitely going to see movies.
Really?
I'm a movie junkie. Bump. Yes, I love going to see movies.
New or classic or...
Everything. I love action. I love Marvel movies. Like classic. Everything. That's like my...
We should do a recording of great film composers' trios.
I'd love to. That's
so
yes.
We'll go top down. And, you know.
I go for runs so that I can think. So that's important. That's not musical. I love whenever, like, we were just in Chicago and we got to go to the Art Institute. That's always so, it's calming and it's also inspiring. And one of my really dear friends lives in the area and she has these adorable little boys. And did I steal your answer?
No.
They're essentially, they feel like my nephews, and getting to spend time with them is like, gives me life. They're the best. They're so cute. So. Oh no, don't tell me! Spoiler alert! No!
They're still great, but the
tired. Dang it.
Well, for me, I'd say I love cooking. I think it's very kind of a peaceful process. Usually, something goes wrong. So I love cooking, and also I've just been recently kind of back to mushroom picking. I grew up mushroom picking back in Russia, and just realized that there are forests here too, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very short time of the year. You're going to do a couple months in the year, but there's something really special in it for me, so I love mushroom picking as well.
Well, thanks for taking the time, Neve Trio. Thanks.
Thank you so much. This was so nice. Thank you.
The Neve Piano Trio, Anna Williams Violin, Mikhail Veselov Cello, and Ari Nakamura Piano. You can find out more about them at their website, Neve, which is NEAVE, like Neve with an N, nevetrio.com. Their first two recordings of American and French trios are on the Chandos label, which is distributed by Naxos. Check them out at naxos.com. And their brand new release of music by Astor Piazzolla is on the Cleveland-based Azica label at azica.com. They will be the featured artists on the Freehold, New Jersey Downtown Concert Series this Saturday evening at 7:30. The concert's held at St. Peter's Church, 33 Throckmorton Street in Freehold. Don't miss them. Tickets and information available at downtownconcertseries.org. I leave you with another track from their Chandos American Moments disc, the final movement from our centenary birthday celebrated musician, Leonard Bernstein, his trio from very early on in his career, 1937, as performed by my guests today, the Neve Trio. And as always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and wwfm.org.